Hello, and welcome to recording number 17 of Gary Gygax's Artifact of Evil, an annotated reading. Today is August 13th, 2021, Friday the 13th. So, we just saw the end of Melf's fight against Gleed and the rest of Obmi's band, who were sent off toward the Vang and the Hierarchs as a way to distract from Obmi and Keek's real mission. Then we've jumped over to the next chapter, chapter 14, where Gord and Geller and Parsifal and the Royal Hippogriff scouts or guards from Selene have landed. They've heard that there is fighting going on in the Whelkwood, probably from Blanc and the Scarlet Brotherhood troops, and they've been gathering up all the evil in the Sus and the Whelkwood, and Oscar and Deirdre have decided that that is the greater evil to fight. So they are splitting off, and with much recrimination. Deirdre was particularly insulting to Byrne and Rufus from Hamlet. And I'm going to restart. It is page 159, third paragraph from the bottom. Oscar and I go to slay these foul raiders, Deirdre said with finality. You others can do as you wish. The one-eyed bard was grim-faced as he nodded. Then so be it. Let us see who will remain faithful, he said. Deirdre seemed to wince at these words, and Oscar turned away but made no objection to the cavalier's assertion that he would accompany Parsifal and the rest against the horde to the south. With the disposition of Deirdre and Oscar decided, Geller turned to the other members of the group and elicited their answer by calling their names. Greenleaf, need you asked, replied Curly with a wide grin. Gord, the young thief spat and stepped beside Geller. I have pledged myself. Inkosi, the warrior's dark face split into a broad grin. A Flan soldier remains loyal unto death, One Eye, he said, and you are my commander. Patrick, Moon. Moon, as usual, spoke for both of the fighters. Your orders, Lord Geller, he said, and both men saluted sharply toward the band. It is settled, then. We six ride north, said Geller, allowing himself a thin smile. Then he turned his head toward Deirdre. I must forgive you, lady, for your decision. I know you follow where you believe your duty lies, even though your vision might be somewhat colored at the moment. In any case, Geller continued brusquely, Bernie, Rufus, and the rest will be glad for your assistance, and the constables, too, for his force is to be reckoned with. The bard stepped up to Deirdre, shook her hand, and wished her success in her endeavor. He did likewise with Oscar and Lord Parsifal. The remaining six members of the band watched as Deirdre and Oscar mounted up with the elven guards. A pair of these latter warriors went off westward to bring intelligence to the court at Onstad, taking with them the half-dozen hippogriffs that Gord and the others had ridden thus far. The aerial cavalry took wing in a thundering of hoof and a rush of great pinions, with neither Deirdre nor Lord Parsifal waving a farewell. We must hurry after them, Bernie said. Matter-of-factly, if you will accompany us, good sirs, your horses await at the keep. All right. I'm going to break. And I just noticed, I always called him Byrne, and here it is Bernie. So I just noticed that the names were, I may just be mistaken from T1 or T1-4. I always thought it was Byrne and Rufus rather than Bernie, but that's how it's been spelled right from the start of the chapter.
In T1, I'm sorry. In T1, there's no Y.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I thought it was just Burn and Rufus.
It might be pronounced the same way, though.
That's true. I rather like it better as Burn myself. So, yeah, that's the big thing right here. I mean, we have more of the storyline, but there really isn't anything new at that. I the big comment I wanted to make was just that change in the spelling. I thought it was interesting. Inkosi, who considers himself, he's a purebred Flan, and he considers himself, to be something a little different, I guess, where he just says a Flan soldier remains loyal unto death. So a little something showing the Flanish culture there, very strong. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 160 and the final paragraph. Gord and the rest followed the magic user as he trotted briskly toward the village. Hamlet was a rather unremarkable place, boasting of little more than a good inn, some small shops, a few houses, and a strong tower recently erected under the supervision of Sir Rufus and the Magus. As Byrne said, there were a number of swift horses awaiting them in the paddock outside the keep. That place was a swarm with activity, for the militia from all over the area was gathering there. The party could spare no time for any of this, and soon all six were mounted and heading away from the arming village, seeking the trail of the Reavers. Break. And it is noted, T1 and T1 to 4, it's Burn with no Y, but it might be pronounced the same. And now I would say, if we look at T1 as 576, then that kind of sets this around that time, as the tower has just been completed, as it is in T1. In T1, Burn is referred to the most worshipful mage of Hamlet, which is basically the same as, the worshipful Magus and everything. So I'm kind of thinking that now is this, never get a date, but again, this seems like it is around 576, maybe a year or two earlier or a year or two afterwards. But they have such big construction plans, and they're, if you remember T1, that part of the storyline is that they're working. They have all these workers, a workers' camp, and they have all these great designs for, and they're working on extending the walls around the tower, and then making it a much more extended keep than just the central tower that exists right now. Now, I would say that there would probably be at least some construction done if it were much later, so I'm kind of thinking this is 576 right here. And then, if we jump back, then we put Gord. Now, it said in one point that he was 21, but I think he would be much more, much more older than that by at least like six or 7 years. So we could put Gord's birth, anywhere up to like into the 540s or late 540s or early 550 CY. Now, there's been a note put about Burns Badgers. These are all mercenaries, chaotic, neutral in alignment. They were once brigands, but are now serving Burn and Rufus, who took them prisoner and spared them. They're high loyalty, high morale, and they've seen some action against other marauders. And the leaders of this band, 16 men-at-arms and two fighters, and both the fighters like the village and their current employment. And it's so, yeah, so we know there's a little bit about their core as well that as, you know, as the regular, you know, as the regular militia who are described in T1. You know, so we know a little about what kind of strength that Byrne and Rufus and the villagers. Now, from the context of this, I would say that everybody within riding distance has been given the word. So I'd expect Hamlet not to be alone out there, but a part of a series of small farms and maybe manors and you know, small thorps and hamlets like they are all around this area, you know, because that would be the main thing to, you know, be feeding. And in T1, rather than T1 to 4, this group's called mercenaries rather than Byrne's Badgers. So there was a little bit of expansion of some of the lore that you got out of T1 to 4, Temple of Elemental Evil.
It's spelled Burns, B-U-R-N-E, in the Thomas Reed Temple of Elemental Evil book, too.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I mean, I am surprised, but, you know, this was a TRR book from Artifact of Evil, so I'm a little surprised at the slight name change. It could just be a little slip-up. There's just a couple pages here about Hamlet. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 160 and the final paragraph. Gord and the rest followed the magic user as he trotted briskly toward the village. Oh, I think I'm past this, but oh well, I'll read it anyway. Hamlet was a rather unremarkable place, boasting of little more than a good inn, some small shops, a few houses, and a strong tower recently erected under supervision of Sir Rufus and the Magnus. As Byrne had said, there were a number of swift horses awaiting them in the paddock outside the keep. That place was a swarm with activity, for the militia from all over the area was gathering there. The party could spare no time for any of this, and soon all six were mounted and heading away from the arming village, seeking the trail of the Reavers. "I like not this lessening of our strength," Inkosi confided to Gord. "Our number was scant enough at the outset. Now a dozen is but six, and our spell worker is amongst the missing." "Treachery took four, fickleness the balance," replied Gord bitterly. "Both are foul. Still, both Geller and Greenleaf are able users of the recondite arts." "Still," countered Inkosi, "I mislike losing our wizard. For Diomers of his sort are more potent in battle than those of priestly sort." For one claiming to be but a plain warrior, Inkosi displayed uncommon astuteness in matters of spells. Gord looked at him with new respect as they rode. "And what of the cavalier?" he asked his companion. "A fearless and puissant fighter, no doubt. I would have Deirdre as a weapon mate in any battle. It is her cousin, though, who was to enable us to come to sword strokes with the foe," Inkosi said. "That is why I speak as I do." "I refer to Oscar as Deirdre's cousin," Gord said with a puzzled expression. Inkosi looked at Gord for a moment, reading his expression carefully. "I thought you knew," he said. "Though the two have a fair reputation along the wild coast, their grandmother was a noble of the court of Hardby. The town of Safeton abdicated her, and when no ransom was paid as demanded, the sec had her publicly executed as an object lesson." And then Inkosi shrugged and continued. "The two grew and came to Sectown one day. Nobody knew their identity, and when they did, it was too late. Next day, Safeton had a new ruler. The family Longland of Hardby was avenged. Ransoming is no longer so popular with the masters of Safetown either. All right, so break right here. So we get a little bit of history, and we learn that Oscar and Deirdre are cousins, but also we learn that their grandmother was abducted and killed by the sect of Safeton. And then it took these two, Deirdre and Oscar, to come back and kill the sect. And, you know, then Safeton and avenged their grandmother. And that their name is Longland of Hardby. And it's a family name. Rather, their grandmother is never named in herself. But we can add that to a little bit of lore here about the Longlands of Hardby. And so that should be a nice little, you know, little bit of lore that we can flesh out Hardby with, and a little bit of history about Safeton. I'm a little surprised that Hardby itself did not come and do something against Safeton. But, yeah, you know, so here, Safeton being one of, I think, the larger cities on the Wild Coast here. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 161, the final paragraph. George said nothing to that, and the two rode in silence until it was time to encamp for the night. Eventually, they came upon the place where the dwarf had fallen upon the pilgrim train and had slain most of the hapless folk. It was near sunset when they discovered the grisly remains of the slaughter. Vultures and crows squawked and flapped angrily away as the six riders came upon the sheltered glen. "Not long dead," Moon pronounced, after examining several of the corpses. "Aye, these murders were done this very day," agreed Patrick. "The bastards are not far ahead, then. Let us ride around and see if there are any signs of survivors," Greenleaf said. "If you, my friend, will take the right," he said to the ashen-faced bard, "I will take the left." So, break. I should have mentioned that, you know, I'm that as far as the story goes, we see Gord's interest in Deirdre and his thought that Oscar and Deirdre, as they had joked before, were lovers and instead they're cousins. And Gord reacts a little to that. And I think Nkosi is able to see Gord's reaction. Now, they come upon the pilgrim train that has been slaughtered. And I would say that is something that, you know, a DM should think about using, that you know, you don't necessarily have to come upon something in the middle of battle. They could, you could arrive and find beforehand, join the pilgrim group, and then there could be the fight to come, and the characters could be involved in it. Or you could come afterwards, like these have, and find the remains of the pillaged and slaughtered pilgrims. And then have to decide where that will take the characters. Are they on some important quest like Geller and Gord and Greenleaf? Or would they want to report to somebody in Verbabank about what has happened? So something like that can be a nice little adventure idea, or start of adventure.
Do we know where the pilgrims were headed to?
I don't believe we do. I definitely they were headed north, and they were headed towards some crossing of the Velverdiva. There are a couple places on the map that have they call themselves fords, but I don't believe they'd be fords. They'd have to be ferries, you know, and at the very edge of the Verbabank holdings. Or I think that was after Obmian had left Verbabank already, and then they slaughtered the pilgrims because they did not want trouble within the small city itself.
Yeah, right. As it was directed.
Yeah, so I think that what we're seeing here, now the group, I mean, from the context, it would seem that they went from Hamlet to attacking the pilgrims, and Obmian, Keek, and the bunch, and then to Verbabank. I thought they went to Verbabank. It's so recent that I thought they first went to the city, but I'm not sure, and I'll have to look back and see what order all this happened in. They could have slaughtered the pilgrims, then gone to Verbabank, and then crossed, the Velverdiva, especially at Verbabank, which must have some kind of, using the barge, the Rene barge people or somebody, it must have had some kind of crossing there. We can see Hamlet is, if this is Anna Meyer's map, we're looking at 12 miles hex. And so we're looking at about 36 or more miles from Hamlet to Verbabank. And from Verbabank, I'd expect them to actually cross the river. So I'm not quite sure. We'll have to look back and see if this is the right order, because it seems strange that they found the slaughtered pilgrims. I had thought that the pilgrims had been, that they left Hamlet in good order, and the scouts that followed them let them go, but I didn't think that they had joined the pilgrim train till a little later. So I have to look back, and unfortunately my memory of the event, even so quickly, is, I'm not 100% right there. And it's something that we can add for, the archive and put it on the text for that particular recording when we find it, about what was going on. All right. I'm going to restart. It is page 162 and the sixth paragraph. Geller nodded, and they rode into the scrub and tall grass. Geller, Gordon, and Cosi went to the right, while the druid, Moon, and Patrick took the opposite side. Although they were careful, Geller's group could not find a single trace of anyone who had fled the massacre. Soon it was too dark to continue, so Geller signaled for the three of them to return to the road, with Gord leading the way out of the underbrush. They came back onto the road about 100 yards from the site of the murders. "Here come the others," Gord called excitedly to his comrades, "and they have someone with them." This was plainly evident. A total of 5 figures were walking up the well-used way, with the adventurers, 3 horses being led behind. After moving on a sufficient distance to remove themselves not only from the proximity to the bodies, but also from predatory beasts attracted to the carnage, the 6 hard-bitten adventurers made camp and examined their new charges. One was a girl of 11 or so, the other a boy about 2 years younger. Both were pale and silent. The husky druid patted them fondly and spoke in his most affable voice. "I know you've been through a terrible experience, and if possible, we would have aided you to prevent the murders. That isn't possible. If you can tell us what happened, we will try to bring the culprits to justice." Here, Curly Greenleaf paused and looked at each of the children. "Do you understand?" The boy only stared back, but the girl spoke. "Yes, please help us," she whimpered, her voice trailing off. Nkosi offered the two some hard biscuits and sharp yellow cheese. The children accepted the food woodenly, then devoured it ravenously, for they had not eaten all day. Moon proffered his wineskin, demonstrating how good the stuff was before the children drank. Now somewhat refreshed, the girl spoke in a voice that was steadier but still very quiet. "I'm Isabel, and this is my brother Franz," she began. "He came all the way from Ernst, sailing across the Near Dev to Divers. Father died, you know, so Father took us with him on a pilgrimage to Mitric in Valuna, but now Father is dead too." Geller placed his cloak around the girl's shoulders. "He was a good man, I am certain," said the bard in a gentle tone. "Now he has no more troubles to bear. You must think now of yourself and your brother. Life goes on for you, and you must tell us of these murderers." Isabel stifled a sob and spoke with trembling lips. "It happened just as everybody was waking up and getting ready to travel. Franz and I went into the bushes to, well, you know." She hesitated a moment, not wanting to recall what occurred, but realizing she must. "I heard a cry, a scream, and awful laughing, too. Franz started to run to the camp to see what was the matter, but I held him back." "We both hid under some bushes," the boy interjected. "One of the men guarding the caravan was running toward us. He had an arrow through his arm, and someone on a horse was chasing him." "I didn't want to watch, but I had to," Isabel said, picking up the story. "The guard didn't get very far. There was a dwarf riding after him, and he threw an awful hammer at the poor fellow. It hit him on the back and knocked him down. The dwarf just sat there. We didn't move or make a sound." Franz nodded, adding, "He was holding the big hammer again. It flew right back to him after it killed the guard. The dwarf was going to get off his horse. A laughing elf came up, running up just then. He was giggling about they had murdered everyone." "No, that's not right," Isabel corrected her brother. "They talked about killing everyone except the ones they'd keep to sell as slaves." "Did this dwarf and the laughing elf have names?" asked Geller. "Think carefully." "Oh, yes, sir," the boy said eagerly. "The dwarf was called Lord Obmi. The nasty elf was Geek." "Peek," the boy's sister said in a tone that indicated she was used to correcting him. "What happened then?" the one-eyed bard gently prompted the girl. "We stayed hidden," said Isabel. "A man came and searched the body of the dead guard. He stripped it and took everything. We stayed put for a long time, but finally there was no more sound for a long time. We got up and looked for Father. This," her voice trailed off and she looked down. "Then we decided to find some water and see if we could get something to eat too," Franz said, taking up the narrative and pretending his sister was not crying. "That's when you found us." "We will camp here for the night," Greenleaf told the party. "Tomorrow we'll do what we can for the dead, and then get these younglings to a safe place." All the others nodded a grim agreement. There was a sanctuary of Rao in the nearby town of Littleburg. They left the newly orphaned youngsters there with sufficient coin to see to their welfare until an uncle could be notified and come for them. Gord made a point of promising the two, and Franz in particular, that he would serve as their avenger. Isabel looked away. But the boy gritted his teeth and clasped Gord's arm. "How will I know? Otherwise I must seek these murderers out myself." "I will send you word somehow, and proof too," the young adventurer replied earnestly. "This holy place will know where you have gone, and one of their brethren will carry word to you and your sister wherever you are." "Thanks," Franz whispered. "But I wish I was big and strong enough to go with you." Gord, thinking of his own youth, shook his head and said firmly, "Such is not for you, lad, not now, or ever if you can help it. Rest easy, though. For once I pledge myself, I do not flinch from the vow. You will hear from me. And with that, Gord turned and walked away. Brother and sister stood and watched him until he was out of sight. Break. All right, that is the end of chapter 14, page 163. One of the things that I found interesting was that they are near the town of Littleburg. I don't see it on this map. It's a named place. I'm not sure it's in Verbabong, unless it's another town called Littleburg. It's supposedly,
I think it's in Furiondi.
All right, see, this is where this narrative here seems strange to me. All right, they leave Hamlet, and they at some point, now they're riding horses. At some point, they come upon this massacre. Now, I thought the massacre was after Verbabank. But they don't mention reaching Verbabank. They actually mention, they seem to have run into Littleburg right away. Yes, and there's Littleburg and Furiondi. Now, again, these are unreliable narrators. So Chris has put up the map here showing Littleburg and Furiondi. And so this massacre seems to have occurred in Verbabank, which would not be anywhere close, I would say, to Littleburg. So I feels a little disjointed here, and I'm not sure if we're like Gygax has kind of missed a step here, because now they camp right after they encounter Isabel and Franz here. So it really does. Oh wow, yeah. I mean, we have Littleburg is, yeah, I mean, that's, even using Anna's map, that's what, 100 miles away, maybe? So I just think that, there's a little confusion here. I don't think from the way they talked that they were very far from Hamlet. Not all the way up into Furiondi, and I didn't think that the pilgrims were slaughtered until after the left Verbabank, but not that far away. So, again, this is going to be a good chapter area here to look back on and try to figure out if there's just some mistakes about what's being described. But I really, from what I remembered, I really think that the pilgrims were killed in Verbabank. Not the city itself, but in, the viscounty. I don't think they're very near. I think they're 30 or 40 miles away from Hamlet, but I don't think they're all the way up by Littleburg. So either Gygax has placed Littleburg very close to Verbabank, or... it just seems a little confusing right here. All right. I am going to restart.
I found the other passage.
Okay.
If you want to take a look at it real quick.
Sure. Or you can, if you read it, can you tell me what the summation
is? It's still confusing. But yeah, it seems like it took... Abni to get to wherever it was that the pilgrims 10 days. So it would have been 10 days out of wherever they left the forest. Maybe I'm guessing.
So it's after they were in Hamlet, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they've traveled 10 days. And I would say with their loaded train, it might have taken them 2 days to reach the Velverdiva and then travel 8 more days, to the place where there is the crossroads for a road that ran east and west from Furiondi to Valuna City. So they should not...
When they say from Furiondi, I think they're in Furiondi, maybe?
Yes, I assume. Yeah, and I assume there are near Littleburg. I just think there's no way that Gordon Company could be there just riding horses. You know, I don't think they're going to make more than the distance from Hamlet to the Valverdiva. Then, and not even that in the first day of riding. So, you know, I don't think that they could have traveled in one day what Abmi took more than 10 days to cross. Now, I would say that Abmi and company, till they split, they are dragging wagons and slaves. So I don't think they're moving forward at more than a walking pace. So, but again, if they've made it as far as Littleburg, I don't see them being able to have traveled quite, you know, quite this distance. So, yeah, I think there's some confusion going on here. All right. Which, you know, I mean, it does happen, but Gygax has been pretty spot on as far as most things. And I, yeah, so Littleburg is 15 hexes north of Verbabank as the crow flies. So it's 180 miles. So if they're near Littleburg and Furiundi, and as that says, 10 days, that makes sense. But this latest passage of encountering slaughtered pilgrims so quickly does not make sense to me, because you know, looking back right now, all right, on page what is it, on page 160, the six ride north from Hamlet. And the Irdra and the Selene guards, they fly into toward the Whelkwood. So that's where they're split. And then there's the same, there's the little talk between Gordon and Cosi about Deirdre, and that is on the same day that they set off from Hamlet. And then on 162, they camp for the night. Then there is an indistinct amount of time, because what it says after the first night's camp on page 162, it says they eventually came upon the place where the dwarf had fallen upon the pilgrim train. Now, that is just this eventually. Now, that doesn't sound to me like, you know, it's a very gray area right here. Yeah, eventually is doing a lot of work in that sentence. But, again, it's coming from the opinions of Inkose or Gord. So, anyway, that eventually kind of takes care of that. So, they have gone from, in that eventually, they've gone through Verbabank, and about 180 miles north, which should, even by horseback, have taken them, say they did, you know, on horseback, say they did 50 miles a day, it would still take them about 3 days, you really pushing their horses. Yeah, so, you know, nothing happened. All right. I think that settles things well enough. Then we get we have two little characters here, and we also have mentioned that in Littleburg there is a sanctuary of Rao. Oh, and then there's mentioned that they were either going toward, there's no, but these, the children and their father were on a pilgrimage. And no mention if they were on their way to Mitric in Valuna, or whether they were coming back from Mitric. You know, so you know, we don't know again where they were actually going.
I would assume Mitrick is a city.
I would assume too. I know you said it wasn't listed.
No, yeah. It's on yeah, there. Yeah, I can't. It's on there. It's in north. It's in northwest Valuna, right before the.
Thank you.
Right before those mountains up there, near Whitehall.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because it's not on. I missed it entirely. Because it is not, is it spelled differently?
I checked the index too. Nope. Yeah,
it wasn't. Here, let me,
it's not on my index, so I must have missed it when I was reading the book.
Yeah, it's northwest of Valuna City. Let me just take a
northwest.
Yeah. Oh no, it's there. I've got
Yeah. I see it.
I'm sorry. It's spelled three different ways. It's spelled Mitrick like
the. Differently in the book. Oh.
Yeah. Well. It's spelled Mitrik, but it's also spelled Mithrick with an H and Mitrick with a CK. It's in Artifact of Evil, as well as several. It's in City of Greyhawk, From the Ashes, Ivid, and Living Greyhawk is at Tyr. So, yep. Yeah, it's a town not too much bigger than Verbabank. It's got between 12,600 and 16,200 listed. So yeah, it actually is there. It is listed. So and I had it listed as on page 7. So it is actually listed on the map. It's number 12 on the map at the beginning of the book.
Cool.
All right. So
I was on the wrong page when I searched.
That must be, you know, that is quite a distance. Actually, I did a find search on my index right now, and I did not come up with it first time, and I actually scrolled up to the right this spelling and found it. So I don't know why it didn't come up. All right. And yeah, it is spelled different ways. I'm not sure from which. I should note that down later on. All right, I am going to restart. It is page 167, chapter 15, beginning of chapter 15, and this is paragraph 1. The group divided and began combing the town for information. There was nothing to be learned about the caravan. No train even remotely resembling the description they gave had entered Littleburg then. Littleburg then was not the place where the brigands had come with their pillaged goods and slaves. Small wonder upon reflection. That evening they questioned barkeeps, ostlers, and tavern owners. One with sufficient prompting of drinking copper recalled that he had seen an odd group heading to the north only yesterday. It seemed a long shot, but the clue was the only one to follow. They took rooms at the tavern, and at first light next morning the six rode northward. There was no hope, of course, of actually tracking the caravan of reavers, for the traffic was heavy along the highway that ran northward all the way to Chendal. They passed several villages and thorps during the morning without coming upon any caravan of substance, although there were farm carts, wagons, and pack trains aplenty. If they are but a day's distance, my friend, Geller said, we shall catch them by nightfall, unless their drop beasts are winged. Let us press on. Ride they did, and by nightfall they had found nothing. The town of Fountain Spring was only a league or so farther, a helpful teamster related, so they rode through the gloaming, and arrived before the gates were shut for the night. The place was a thriving agricultural marketplace, newly arrived at its status. Even its walls were only half completed, and there were many greens and commons still within the town center and the fortifications. Although the residents of Fountain Spring could scarcely number 2,000, there were a number of inns and hostels for travelers, so accommodations were no problem. A pleasant little community, Inkosi remarked.
This is no time to think of settling down for a stay, even a brief one, Greenleaf admonished sternly. The Flan warrior laughed mirthlessly. A wandering sellsword only thinks of putting down roots, never does it, he said. Gord was practical. Why talk, he said with mild irritation. A drink, some food, and a bed are needed, in that order. What else is there to do in a town of yokels such as this? All right, break. Now, I just break here because Fountain Spring was actually a Great Talk project about 25 years ago that I was part of. And we were busily trying to design the little town from the information we had here. But we do get, some information. Actually, we're hearing a little bit more about Fountain Spring than we are of Littleburg. Littleburg should be a slightly bigger town. Fountain Spring really is at town level so far rather than city level. We learned that it's a thriving agricultural marketplace. Its walls are only half completed at this point. Population is around 2,000, but there are still a number of inns and hostels. We're given a little bit there on Fountain Spring, which was what inspired us about 25 years ago to do more with it. All right, Gord's rather scathing about them, calling them all yokels. And Furriundi is a good place to find a peaceful town, this far from the border, but still this is going to be a walled town or a walled city. So perhaps not as peaceful an area to go to all the work of walling it in. All right, and on this map it shows Littleburg, Fountain Spring, and Chendal. I can see Fountain Spring. Now, they have traveled pretty far to the north so far. And it looks like they're branching a little northwest there. They're moving more in the direction of Obmi and Keek than Gleed and the rest of the caravan. Maybe the luck of Gord and such there to actually, unlike poor Melf, who encountered them and didn't recognize them, at least because of Isabel and Franz, the children, they now know the names of Obmi and Keek. All right. I'm going to restart. It's page 168 and paragraph 6. They managed to bathe and get fresh garments as well before the searchers set out again next day. It was evident they had missed their quarry somewhere between Fountain Spring and Littleburg. Neither town militia nor southbound travelers had seen a trace of a caravan such as Geller inquired of. Cursing about the time they had wasted, the six retraced their route toward Littleburg. In the afternoon, they discovered that the train of demihumans and hard-eyed men had crossed the At River, but a half score of miles above Littleburg, at the place called the Broad Ford. The main channel of the At was to the east, and was spanned by a high bridge that enabled the river traffic to pass unhindered. To reach this crossing, however, a great shallow branch of the river had to be forded. An oddly tilted island that, Moon said to no one in particular. I recall that I've been this way once now that I see the place, said Nkosi. The deep channel passes through a rock-walled ravine, and it has worn the stone in such a manner as to make a half-bridge of natural rock. The rest was finished a century ago. It is broad enough for two large wagons to pass each other. Break. So, we have this this bridge at Broadford, and some little description here of the At River. And one of the things, it provides a little bit of history here. This was built 100 years ago,
And we actually, we don't tend to get too much of that in these stories about saying, you know, when they had...
And, you know, it's noted here that Fountain Spring is very, very far north from Broadford. And again, I'm not sure if the town... they'd missed their quarry somewhere between Fountain Spring and Littleburg. They retraced their route. But again, I don't think they could be traveling quite this distance. I mean, again, Fountain Spring to Littleburg, is it 100 or more miles distant? And again, they're kind of zipping around here. I mean, because they're talking of going first to Littleburg and then up to Broadford. But even if they went directly to Broadford, that's quite a bit of traveling coming from Fountain Spring. So, you know, I mean, the eventually that was used, that was that meant a travel of, you know, over 100, over 200 miles. And now they've traveled south probably more than 100 miles to redo this. So, you know, again, there's also the question of timing. They get to Hamlet, and that group with Omni has left. Now, they immediately leave, and the Omni's group with wagons and slaves could not have been traveling that fast. So it really strikes me as odd that the journey from Hamlet, that they did not overtake this caravan much, much earlier. So I think there's some skipping been going on about distances and travel time. And again, that is something, you know, for a DM to take note of, because, you know, a lot of people do a lot of hand-waving with that, but that is, those are, you know... those are fairly big distances. And again, I find it Gygax's description here of the caravan and the six chasing it down. I think that if it was... Yeah, and it's like it's noted here that days are passing without any mention in the book. So it's very hard to keep time. But if you think about it... the Abmian group leave Hamlet, all right? Now, they've already said that they left with those wagons and stuff of loot. So they're traveling at the speed, you know, even if they don't have slaves with them, which I guess I'm... even if they're traveling without slaves, they're definitely bringing wagons with them, which would slow their pace. And I find it strange that Gord... and the others do not catch up with them before they reach the site of the Pilgrim Massacre. And now we have this business of them traveling from Littleburg to Fountain Spring and then back from Fountain Spring back south again. And it seems to be passing very quickly. So I don't know. Maybe we'll have to really go through this and see if there's another mention. But I don't think that the story is really following the distance and time that it would take to do these things. So I'm not sure if Gygax kind of slipped up at this point right here. All right. So they are now at the At River and crossing the bridge. I'm going to restart. It is... yeah, and there's a question here if the Broadford was on a further northern portion of the At River. But it says... the six were toward Littleburg. In the afternoon, they discovered that a train... Yes. So what it sounds like is they make Fountain Spring. And they're traveling south for a little bit. And then from there, so I guess that they're traveling south a little from a day's travel because it's the afternoon. If they travel, if Broadford is actually closer to Fountain Spring, then they could reach it fairly quickly. No, but then it says, the men had crossed the At River but 10 miles above Littleburg. So, yeah, I mean, that makes very little sense to me. Broadford's maybe a little far, but definitely the distance between Fountain Spring and Littleburg is not being taken into account. So they leave Fountain Spring, they travel till the evening. They find that the caravan has crossed the At River at Broadford. Now, I would say that Broadford then, but then they're supposedly just 10 miles north of Littleburg. So either Fountain Spring, Gygax had an idea that Fountain Spring was, you know, nowhere near as far away as it's shown on this map. That's the only thing that would make sense to me, is that the Fountain Spring location, if Gygax, you know, if we're following Gygax, then the Fountain Spring location is probably got to be about 50 miles north of Littleburg. And that would make more sense. So I could see that. But so I'm gonna just think that Gygax was putting Fountain Spring much, much farther south than it is. Yeah, and you know, it's just could be that in a one of the Tui setting books that they, you know, they weren't necessarily following Gygax's novels, so that they would put Fountain Spring much further north than Littleburg. But I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, I'm thinking that I would definitely move, if you're following the Gygax setting, I would move Fountain Spring much farther south. And then it puts itself together right here correctly. So we gain a little bit more information about this bridge. The deep channel passes through a rock-walled ravine, a half bridge of natural rock. So we learn a little bit about Broadford there. At River, the Broadford is Broadford's supposed to only be about 10 miles rather than 40 above Littleburg, because that's what it says here on page 168. In the afternoon, they discovered that the train of demihumans and hard-eyed men had crossed the At River but a half score miles above Littleburg, at a place called the Broadford. So definitely we're looking at a different location all about it. Broadford is just about a hex on the Annemeyer map, and would from Littleburg. Yeah, this has been a bit of confusion on the distances in this section right here. And I'm definitely going to go back for tomorrow and try to work out where those pilgrims were massacred. But again, I just think the biggest thing that I'm not seeing is the distance that's being traveled by Gord, Geller, and company, and the six on horseback, with the caravan keeping so far ahead of them for such a time. So I don't think that Abmi would be able to keep that lead for so many days. All right, it's 7 o'clock, and I'm gonna end right here. Right.
Good night.
Good night. page 168. Night, Chris.
Okay.
And so I'm going to call up Craig. I think we'll work out, I'll work out some of the confusion about what was going on in this section right here. Good night, Sam. Good night. All right.